Welcome to High Truths on Drugs and Addiction, where national experts bring you facts and answers. I'm your host, Dr. Onit Lev, an emergency and addiction doctor who has served at the White House and practiced on the front lines. Right here on High Truths, you will learn from experts from around the globe and around all aspects of drugs and addiction. High Truths is more than a podcast. It's a movement to unite physical, mental, and addiction health. It brings innovations to connect public health, public safety, and prevention. Our discussions inspire people to implement programs that save lives. To grow this community of information and action, I hope you give us a 5-star review. Come visit me on hightruths.com. Today's episode is sponsored by Drug Free America Foundation, tackling the pervasive issue of substance use and its far-reaching impacts on individuals, families, and community. Drug Free America is supporting ISAC, the International Academy on the Science and Impact of Cannabis, doctors and scientists educating on the harms of marijuana. Hello again, High Truth listeners. Get ready for a community conversation. I'm your host, Dr. Onit Lev. Community, as in groups of people living in the same locality and under the same government. Never underestimate the power of community. I love the story of Compton's fight against the marijuana shops. Compton, California is in downtown inner city Los Angeles. You may have heard of the movie Straight Outta Compton about the hip-hop group that manages the rough life of Compton. You would think Compton would be selling pot at every corner. And yet, the community fought back. They organized, held meetings, and spoke out against further destruction of their neighborhood by flooding it with marijuana. The rich Hollywood movie star neighborhoods of L.A. did not want marijuana drug sales in their neighborhood. And the mothers, fathers, and grandparents of Compton children did not want marijuana in their neighborhood either. Communities are powerful. To learn more about communities, I reach out to Jamie Ross. Jamie Ross wears many hats. She is the executive director of the PAC Coalition in Nevada and sits on too many boards and committees to count. Jamie has been involved with substance misuse prevention from a young age and took that passion into a career creating system-wide change to reduce substance misuse. And according to Jamie, the key to change is the power of community. To learn more about Jamie Ross, check out the High Truth show notes. I record this conversation with Jamie on March 5th, 2025. Jamie Ross, welcome to High Truths.
Thank you so much for having me, Dr. Lev.
It is wonderful. I saw you at the CADCA conference and we chatted and you had so much energy and so much going on. I thought, you know, I should get her on the show. So I'm really excited to have you here.
Thank you so much.
And with all my guests, I like to kind of get to know you. How did you get into the field of prevention?
So I was really lucky that I grew up doing what I now consider prevention work as a youth, but didn't really realize that that's what I was doing. And
tell us about that. What does that mean to do prevention as a youth? What does that look like for kids?
We really considered it youth leadership training, but we actually used the youth-to-youth curriculum. And I remember when I started this job, learning about the youth-to-youth curriculum that's been around since, I think, the late 80s, maybe early 90s. And I remember being in the field and hearing about the youth-to-youth curriculum and their concept of youth leaders.
You're in high school? You're in
middle school? When I was in high school, yes. Okay. And youth to youth is amazing. They kind of let anyone use their program. They don't require you to, license their products. And so my mentor was using the youth to youth curriculum. He must have learned about it somewhere. And we followed that process and I fell in love with it. And I thought,
is this like a club, after school club? Like instead of doing sports or in addition to doing sports, you do this?
Yes. And it was all youth leadership based. So we were really focusing on developing our skills, teaching the folks who are younger than us, like the different leadership styles. And it was incredible. I loved it so much that when I graduated college, I got with my mentor and said, hey, I want to do this. I want to start a nonprofit and I want to do this. And he was like, all right, cool. And so I kind of did this for 4 or 5 years, just with a group of folks who I grew up with, and we loved it so much. And then I got a phone call from a colleague of mine who knew my work, and she said, hey, how would you like to apply for a coalition director position? And I said, I don't know what that is. Tell me more. And so this was all the way back in 2011. So I'm definitely dating myself. But I fell in love, and I didn't know anything about the science behind prevention. I just knew that youth leadership development really gave me the start that I needed in life. And I wanted to make sure that the next generation of youth were given that when I was, you know, young and scrappy and in my 20s. And then I got hired on as a coalition director and had to learn grants and programs and evidence-based practices, and had to learn the whole science behind the things that we do. And I have fallen in love, and I cannot imagine doing anything else.
Well, it shows. And you know, when people love what they do, it's automatically reflected. Hence, you know, the first few seconds that I met you, I noticed that. But you're a coalition director, but you also are executive director of PACT. What is that?
So PACT stands for Prevention, Advocacy, Choices, and Teamwork. And we actually are the largest coalition in Southern Nevada, which most people know as Las Vegas. And so we focus on that. And then I also coordinate all of the coalitions who serve all 17 counties in Nevada. So there's only 17 counties in Nevada. Supposed to, I think a lot of our East Coast states have like 100, and that is just mind-boggling to me. But I coordinate all of them, make sure that all of us in Nevada are connecting, are talking to one another, are working towards the same goals, sharing our best practices, and focusing on making Nevada as drug-free as we can be.
Yeah. Wow, that's great. What's your favorite part of your job?
Oh my goodness. I think it is the community that we have built. I know when things are hard, because there's always, it doesn't matter what job you have, there's always parts of your job that are hard. I have this amazing group of folks who believe in the same things that I do and are working towards the same things that I am. And when I'm having a bad day, I can say, hey, I'm really frustrated and I'm overwhelmed, and they will lift me up. And when they are having a bad day, I can lift them up. And it's just this amazing network of community partners who are doing this phenomenal work. And we may not be doing all of the same things, but we are all trying to make our community safer. And it's why I've stayed here for almost 14 years now.
That's wonderful. That people engagement.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right. So now let's give us an idea of what is happening in Nevada. Like, I was talking, like, we could talk about the problems and then the solutions. So Nevada, we think of Las Vegas, the Strip. What's going on? Fentanyl, stimulants, what are the illegal drugs that are causing havoc?
So we're lucky that fentanyl overdose deaths in most of the country are decreasing, but in Nevada, we are still increasing. And so we're definitely having a lot of illegal fentanyl overdose deaths across the state. But opioids, until fentanyl became, because it's such a deadly drug and it kills so quickly, unfortunately, opioids before this had really never been in our top three when you look at addiction treatment. Because we live in a state that has a lot more 24-hour entertainment than almost any other in the country, we're really stimulant heavy state. We've had a meth problem pretty much for as long as we've been keeping track of these things. When you have every casino in the state, for the most part, is open 24 hours a day, which means you need three shifts, which means we actually have traffic jams sometimes at 7 o'clock in the morning because you've got people coming home and people going into the office. And so really, our historic issues for substance use have been more stimulant based than a lot of the rest of the country, because it is especially the culture of people who work in the entertainment industry is I get off of work and I need to go party. And sometimes I get off at work at 2 o'clock in the morning. Sometimes I get off at work at 7 o'clock in the morning and it's time to go party with my friends, and bars are open 24 hours here. So partying is really easy all of the time. And that is historically why our three biggest issues have been alcohol, marijuana, and methamphetamine. Have always been, again, until fentanyl came on the scene. And we all know fentanyl is right now the most deadly drug out there.
Right. You know, California has the same problem. Interesting you say it's because of the party culture. And in California, it's because of, well, I guess there's always an excuse, whether it's party or being homeless. Like if you're homeless, you need to stay awake so people don't steal your things. And so you have to use stimulants. I think it's also supply. But methamphetamine always has been more deaths than fentanyl until, you know, the flood of fentanyl that mixed in with the methamphetamine. I think that made methamphetamine and the fentanyl deaths go up. And now that fentanyl deaths are coming down, we've seen 2023, I think 2024, we're going to see more methamphetamine deaths than fentanyl deaths again in California. And I bet you guys are the same.
Yes. And that is, we are literally right next door to California. So Las Vegas is about 4 hours away from beaches in Southern California, and Reno is about 3 hours away from San Francisco. So we are right there. They are honestly probably where we get a lot of the things that are coming into our state, because California borders Mexico.
And I'm wondering if you, my perspective is that we have full-on focus on opioids, naloxone, medication for assisted treatment for opioids, but all the people who are suffering with stimulant use disorder and addicted to methamphetamine, and serious medical complications from methamphetamines, we don't really have as many resources for that.
No, and I'm surely not a doctor or a researcher, and I can't speak to why that is, but it is heartbreaking to me to watch our folks with opioid use disorder get this robust treatment with wraparound services, and we haven't really made much strides in the way of treatment with our stimulant use disorder. And I think that stimulants continue to be a problem. And as we know, drug use is cyclical. So I remember when I started in 2011, no one was doing cocaine. Like, cocaine was almost non-existent, and now it's back. And so what are we doing to address the stimulant problem outside of the things that we've been doing since the 70s.
Yeah. I think hearing it from you also is very striking, that you could see it. You don't have to be a doctor to see these group of people are getting all these things and this group of people are not. I think we need to, you know, fix our efforts. What about legal market? I remember visiting Reno and Las Vegas, there was when marijuana was getting legalized, right? When that vote came out, there was incredible, actually, I noticed coalitions, and some of the best speakers around the country came to speak about really the dangers of that. Everything passed anyway. But so since that, what happened to Nevada and Las Vegas?
It's been an interesting trajectory. We followed what almost every other state has, where the laws used to be more prescriptive, and every legislative session that's been chipped away at a little bit. And so marketing with the bright colors that we know attracts our young people is easier now. We actually had prevention folks in the room when those laws were made. But it was really interesting because it was usually one prevention person, one law enforcement, and then six or seven folks in the industry making the decisions on the regulations. And then that's just been chipped away at over and over again. And consumption lounges where you can actually smoke and use on site are now open. And it's a really interesting legal gray area. Right now, our cannabis compliance board is looking to exempt the cannabis lounges from our Clean Indoor Air Act. We already have a really depressing Clean Indoor Air Act because you can still smoke in any casino. There's one casino in Nevada that I know of that does not allow smoking, and it was just a voluntary thing. They kind of changed their marketing model during COVID. And
which casino is that?
It is Park MGM. It used to be the Monte Carlo. They changed it during COVID. And I will tell you, it is literally a breath of fresh air. It is my favorite hotel to go to because the restaurants are great and you don't have to wash your clothes and your hair when you're done. You get to go home and not reek of cigarette smoke. And that is lovely. Yeah. But yeah, our cannabis compliance board is looking to exempt our lounges. And unfortunately, we have folks who are working in cannabis consumption lounges where smoked marijuana is smoked and they are driving home after their shifts.
So that's interesting. You're worried about the secondhand effects of what you have people using, right? And we just passed consumption lounges in California, and I thought, are there posters on the doors that say, don't drive after smoking for 4.5 hours, because data shows that you are, your perception of impairment may not be there, but you're impaired to drive for 4.5 hours.
Right. I have not been to a consumption lounge, so I cannot speak to what they are. I try to stay as far away from that world as possible, but it is an ongoing issue. The way it was sold to Nevada was you can't smoke anywhere on the strip on Las Vegas Boulevard. So this will be the solution for the people who come to Vegas and want to use cannabis, but don't have the ability to do so on Las Vegas Boulevard. So this was their solution, and it's creating a lot of issues.
So let me ask you, take us to a walk down the strip, even before these consumption lounges. Are there smoke shops? Are the marijuana being sold? Is it the Delta 8 products, psychedelics, candies? Is it in the casinos? Are we able to still smell it on the strip, even if you were technically not supposed to?
So interestingly, because Nevada was kind of founded on gaming and gambling, we have really strict laws about gambling, and any agency that has any gambling whatsoever cannot have any connection to cannabis because of the worry of money laundering. Because we have a lot of worry about money laundering when, you know, Bugsy Siegel basically founded Las Vegas. And so nothing.
Tell us that little story.
So the Bugsy Siegel story is really interesting. Everyone, when they come to what they think of as Las Vegas, what we call the Strip, which is everything starting at Mandalay Bay and going to everything before the stratosphere, they all think that they are in Las Vegas. And if you drive, you see the Welcome to Las Vegas sign. The Welcome to Las Vegas sign is not actually in the city of Las Vegas. It is in unincorporated Clark County. And Bugsy Siegel and all of the folks who were running all of the gambling halls before Las Vegas was Las Vegas realized that what we consider downtown is actually Las Vegas. And all of the casinos were taxed, not just for county taxes, but for city taxes. But if they left the city, then they were only taxed once at county taxes. And so most of what you think of as Las Vegas is not Las Vegas. It's we call it unincorporated Clark County, so they don't have to pay city taxes. And basically, that's why our city is built the way that it is. And Bugsy Siegel and the mob really created gambling. We don't have state income tax because gambling pays for most of the taxes in Nevada. Gambling and mining are where we get most of our taxes. And then all of our tourists, we like to tax them a lot.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's a good benefit for the people who live in the area. All right. So no cannabis because of the money laundering. But are there still other little smoke shops around?
Yes. So you can get the Delta 8. You can get the unregulated stuff in little places, but none of it is, Delta 9 THC cannabis.
You don't have cannabis dispensaries, shops along that area?
Not along that area, but don't worry. You go about a quarter of a mile off of Las Vegas Boulevard and you can find dispensaries everywhere. We call it the Industrial Corridor. It actually used to be named Industrial Road, and it was where all of the more seedy and shady parts of Vegas happened. And so now there's a ton of dispensaries just there. And there is oftentimes they'll give you free cab rides to and from so that you can buy what you need to and then head back to Las Vegas Boulevard and continue to party. I will say that technically you're not allowed to smoke smoke cannabis on any property, but
you smell it. It's there.
It's everywhere. It's everywhere. When we're driving home, and I'm sure you in California are doing the same thing, you're smelling it in other people's cars. So they're literally smoking while they're driving.
Yeah. Yeah. I smell it on my patients. I like walk in the room and it's like, okay. And it's interesting, I guess maybe it's the same thing with tobacco smoke. Sometimes I say someone, did you know, like do you use marijuana? And they'll say, yeah, a little. I said, yeah, I can smell it. And they're like, really? Tell me about these consumption lounges. Is that just smoked products? Are they selling edibles there? Do you buy your product there? Do they allow alcohol and marijuana?
So no alcohol, just marijuana, but it's in all of the different forms that you can get marijuana these days. So everything from edibles to smoking to the infused drinks, it's really anything that is regulated marijuana can be bought there, but no alcohol, which is good because you are a doctor and you can speak much better than I can to being what we call crossfaded, which is high and drunk at the same time. And yeah.
You know, in a way, maybe on the strip, that's fair, at least for tourists, if most people who come are not driving, maybe in that sense, it's safer in Vegas. But in California, where, rarely do people take public transportation, the driving aspect, especially for edibles, I mean, you're not supposed to drive for at least 8 hours after a gummy and 4.5 after smoking, according to driving simulation tests where they actually had people use the product and then test their, stopping ability, peripheral vision, and ability to drive. So your driving is impaired, even if you think you're fine. And first they pass the laws and then they correct the problems of what happens.
Yep, that's what's happening here. It's really disheartening to watch. It's sad to think that it is so easy to get something that is fairly addictive. We know that our youth marijuana numbers are going up and have been since it was legalized. It's really just a continued problem.
And then did Nevada ban the intoxicating hemp products like some states did or no?
I don't believe so.
No. Oh, so that's still there.
Yes.
All right. So past marijuana, marijuana available everywhere, now consumption lounges. Since it was legalized, have there been any, there's been a lot of liberalizing of the drug use. Have there been any consumer protection?
No. We did create the Cannabis Compliance Board.
But you're saying that that's mostly run by people who are for the industry?
Yes, absolutely. And that is who are working on the laws.
No public health people or people in prevention?
No. No. These are folks who work in the industry. It was really interesting when Nevada passed our laws, we copied Colorado. And in Colorado, alcohol and tobacco were overseen by the Department of Taxation. But in Nevada, our Department of Taxation is basically just a bunch of auditors. So local control of alcohol, and then tobacco run by our attorney general's office. So totally different. And so you had basically a bunch of auditors who are now in charge of cannabis, and it didn't go too well. And so they've now created the Cannabis Compliance Board, but a lot of the same issues persist. There is more oversight now than there was when we first started, and that's really the only thing I can say. The laws continue to be liberalized when it comes to what we can do around marijuana, what's legal, how we can sell it, how we can package it.
And, interesting.
Yeah.
It's kind of like putting Purdue Pharma in charge of opioid regulation and education.
Yes, absolutely. Nothing could go wrong, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Let's put the cigarette industry, let's put Phyllis Morrow in charge of nicotine potency in cigarettes, right? And advertising, which is interesting. And you know, and now I'm thinking about the lounges. How many years went by before bars and bartenders were held accountable for letting people leave the bar and drive, right? There was like, you have to like, okay, you cut people off and you've had too much, or, you know, there was some accountability there. And now we're starting a whole new intoxicating industry with none of that. Like, we haven't learned from history.
Yes. Why would we want to not repeat the mistakes of our past? I know it was generations before we really started putting robust laws in place. I mean, I remember we were one of the last states in the country to go from 0.1 for illegal intoxication to 0.08. And we only changed because of the federal change. And so we are rarely on the forefront of preventing public health crises.
Yeah. So I want to end up as far as talking about the problems of Las Vegas. My parents lived in Las Vegas for 10 years, and I loved going there with my kids and a lot of fun things to do. So yes, there are drug problems in Nevada, but I love Nevada and I love Las Vegas. It's a fun place to go, even with kids. So now let's talk about like the solutions. And this is where, you know, you come in and where your passion is and in the power of communities. So give us like prevention basics.
So I think what we're really focusing on in Nevada is localized community need. What we know is the problems are kind of the same throughout the state. We're having a lot of the same drug use problems, but but why here question. Why is it a problem specifically here? That's where we're going to get our localized solutions, because local problems require local solutions. And what we've seen a lot is, especially with the opioid money that's coming down, which is great, we want all of this, but it's only to combat the opioid problem. And when we are talking about preventing youth substance use, for the most part, we are not going into classrooms and telling kids drugs are bad. We are giving kids the skills to cope when life gets hard. We are connecting them to school and community resources, making sure that their parents know how to talk to them and their parents are having a positive relationship with them and they feel like their school and their community supports them. And so it's really hard to target a specific substance. And that's one of the things that we get frustrated with when all of these federal dollars come out. You know, we want them and we will use them. But how do we focus on the local issues? So some of the things that are really different in different parts of Nevada is the why here questions. How are kids getting marijuana? And in some of our counties, we still don't have legalized retail marijuana, but they go across the county border to get it, or they go to a neighboring state. They go to California or Arizona or somewhere to get it. And what's interesting is our youth, the culture in some of our rural and frontier communities is so different. There was a great study that University of Nevada, Reno did about advertising for cannabis. And in Vegas, it was all entertainment, party, have fun. And in Reno, which is a 40-minute drive from Tahoe, just a really different place, it was all wellness and zen and lots of yoga poses. And so it's very different how we're advertising based on the culture of each of our communities. We call it the Muddy Study, and it was a marijuana study and focused really specifically on what our youth were seeing. And unfortunately, our youth are seeing a ton of marijuana advertising, even though they're not supposed to.
It's on the phone. I mean, if you're scrolling on anything, I still get pop-up ads for that. Like, why am I getting this?
It's so frustrating. But it's, the cool thing is we can, with local solutions, we can really focus on the issues in our community. So some of the things, like, we focus a lot more on stimulant education and outreach than a lot of our other communities do, because we have such a methamphetamine and, you know, all sorts of stimulant problem. But one of the things that I've loved to see is, like, when we had you come out before marijuana got legalized, what we'll do is we'll take something that we know is working somewhere else in the state and we'll copy and paste it, but make it unique to our community. So, like, when we had you and some of your folks in Reno, it was much more, let's talk about the laws and the potential negative outcomes. And down here, it was more of a, let's talk about some of the unintended consequences and negative outcomes, because that was what our data showed down here in Vegas was more effective. Unfortunately, we still lost, but we're continuing to address that. And one of the things that I'm really proud of is state law only requires us to do alcohol beverage server training if you live in a city the size of either Reno or Vegas, or a county the size of Reno or Vegas. So those are our only two counties that require it. But most of our counties have either put in their own county requirements because that long-term community coalition, we know that it works if our servers are trained in not over-serving. And then in some of our communities that don't have that as a county law, have it as a county culture, and you get kudos in the newspaper if you train your servers on beverage training. And we actually have a big motorcycle run in northern rural Nevada. And the coalition actually goes out and they're the ones who give out the alcohol wristbands and make sure that everyone is beverage server trained and no one's being overserved. So it really is community focused based on community need, because what they saw was a whole bunch of Harley riders getting on their motorcycles very, very drunk. And the coalition went to the county commissioners and were like, we have a solution for you if you would like to not worry about Harley riders crashing into everything. And, you know, we live in a very mountainous state, although I don't think people realize, I know you do, you you're here all of the time. And there's some pretty big mountain ranges you have to go getting from San Diego over here. But it's lovely to watch the local communities come together around whatever the issues are of the day.
You know, when you're talking about that study about how marketing in Las Vegas is party and the ones in Reno is yen, I always think it's like the industry is always a step ahead in terms of prevention. And I think we could learn from them, right? So if you know that that's their marketing, they've done their research, right? They're after the dollars, so they're got good money and good research on that. You can copy it. And I think some of my little prevention work, I did, again, copying what the industry does. So I remember as a young doctor, I mean, I have the medical analogies, but as a young doctor, I would, you know, we'd have the young drug reps give us samples. And I even had a prescription pad, and they would have like Lortab, and all you had to do, patient's name and sign the prescription. You didn't have to like write in, like take one every 2 hours. That was always pre-printed for you. And this was before electronic health records. So it was just very easy, made it very easy. All you have to do is sign your name, doctor, put a sticker, and you're done. And so when started working on the issue of drugs, it's like, wait, they're doing that for opiates. I'll do that for naloxone. This is, you know, 10 years before naloxone was over the counter. It's like, I'm just going to hand out naloxone prescriptions.
That's amazing. What a great idea. I never would have thought of that. But yes, we actually do, when we do our statewide campaigns, we've done a lot of statewide opioid campaigns, and we utilize that in Northern Nevada. It's very zen, hippie, go on walks in nature instead of using drugs. And down here, it's you can party sober. And in our rural and frontier communities, it's more cowboy culture, doesn't have to be drug specific. And so it's really interesting. But I love that idea where you said, we're going to make preventing overdoses or reversing overdoses as easy as we made it to get into this mess in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah. That was it. But the whole principle was like, okay, I'm going to learn from them what you guys are doing.
Yes.
All right. So coalition. So what is a coalition?
So a coalition is a group of people who get together to address a common issue that we're all seeing in our community. Obviously, we focus on substance use prevention. And the thing that I love is what we like to say is people take off their hats of their personal biases and their agency hats. We take off our agency hat when we walk in the door, and we put on our coalition hat, because it's not about getting funding to a specific agency. It's not about making sure that one particular market is what we focus on. It is, we're coming together as a community to address this issue, which means we first need to understand what the local issue is. And to be able to dig really deep into the local issue and then find local solutions to that issue. And it's really a convening of partners and a collaboration. We're lucky that we're members of CADCA. And so we've been trained by what I consider to be the best trainers in the country on how to do this work well. And it's fascinating to me. When I started this work, I didn't really know what a coalition was. I just really believed in youth development, and that really wanted to make sure that our community was safe. And what I've seen is when a coalition is running well, there's no one person who's leading the charge. Everyone is leading their piece of the puzzle and taking all of this great information back to their agencies, to their homes, to their schools, and making changes internally that they know are going to result in our safer communities. And that is, I think,
that's great.
The coolest part of what we do.
And shout out to, we'll have a episode before you with Sue Thau from CADCA, so she's in an episode if people want to hear more about CADCA. But the coalitions that we're talking about, they are focused on youth, on preventing drug use from youth, in youth. And you talked about funding. So who's paying for this?
So we are lucky. Statewide, we probably have 50 to 70 different funding streams working on different aspects. Our largest coalition has over 50 grants. They do a lot more than youth substance use. But for the most part, almost all of our dollars come from the federal government. They come from Health and Human Services, usually Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, what we call SAMHSA. There's a lot of CDC funding out there. But the funding to do prevention work is teeny tiny. The base grants that most coalitions get is the Drug-Free Communities Grant, and it's $125,000. And it's been $125,000 for at least 15 years. And 15 years ago, $125,000 got you a lot more than it does now.
Wow, that's impactful. But you stretch those dollars, you do amazing work with that little amount.
We really do. And what we know is every one of our coalitions has a youth, either a youth coalition or a youth team, where the youth are the subject matter experts on their lives. They know what is needed in their community much more than those of us who have long since aged out of school. Because again, if we're talking about local solutions, we need to talk about what it looks like for kids today.
Yeah, that's great. And that's, when we talk about kids, are you talking about elementary, middle school, high school, college?
So our youth programs are usually K through 25.
Nice.
But
that's very scientific.
Yes. Yes. So with our elementary school programs, it's a lot of pro-social behavior, connecting to school, dealing with your feelings, dealing with your emotions. By middle school, we're doing a lot of education about brain science. By high school, we're doing a lot of brain science and more positive alternative activities, ensuring that there are places to go and things to do that are not partying on the weekends. And then in college and our 18 to 25 range, we know that is a huge time for especially alcohol consumption. And I'm sure similar to a lot of other states, we show that alcohol use is higher among students who are attending college than they are outside. So especially in our college campuses, really focusing on alcohol consumption and working with our communities to talk about, even as high as our drug use numbers are, the positive social norms. Even us adults, we think people drink a whole lot more than they drink because it's part of the culture. And so ensuring that kids know that, yeah, no, most kids aren't getting high every weekend. Most kids aren't drinking every weekend. Even though you think that that's what you're seeing such a tiny percentage of the total. So really focusing on the positive, especially for our youth. Our youth drug numbers have been going down steadily since, what, Dr. Lev, the 70s, 80s, 90s? It's been a while.
Going down, yeah. But the good news is again, like you say, I've learned that from our prevention specialist. Like, always talk about the social norm. And the social norm is that most people don't use alcohol all the time or use drugs or any of those things. That is the norm. And the data, you know, from all the surveys, NISDA, Monitoring the Future, shows that over the years, more kids are making that choice to protect their brain and not use any alcohol, nicotine, or any type of drug.
Yeah. And so we're really excited. I think what this shows is that prevention works, especially science-based prevention. We know what the best practices are, and we're always trying to learn more and better and newer techniques, and ensuring we don't repeat the mistakes of the past.
Yeah.
There's a lot of really great programs that are historical that had amazing intentions, but didn't have the science behind them. And now we realize how important that is.
That's great. Well, I'm wondering if you have any like specific story or program. I shared with the audience the power of community with Compton. And when, California legalized marijuana, Compton, a very inner LA city, the leaders of that community said, no, we don't want this in our town. And they expected, Compton to have, a smoke shop with selling marijuana on every corner. They even had the shelves already empty and ready for the products to come in. And the community rose and said, no, we need to protect our youth. You don't want it in your elite Hollywood neighborhoods. We don't want it in our neighborhood either. And I thought that was like amazing. And the power of the community, just local people, moms, dad, pastors, ministers who came together and said, we got enough problems. We don't need to add this.
Yeah, I think it's been really amazing to watch, especially around cannabis. When cannabis became legal, what happened was a lot of the folks that have we have a very wealthy suburb of Vegas called Summerlin. And
that's where my parents lived.
Yes, it's absolutely beautiful. And they came together and said, look, it may be legal in the county, but you're not going to have dispensaries here. We don't want our kids walking by it when they're walking home from school. We are known as a family-friendly community, and we want to keep that family-friendly. And so it's been really amazing to watch our community come together and say, no, not here, not with us. And we actually still have counties in Nevada that have not legalized retail at all, because they are worried about the harms to their youth. And so we're really proud of them. We're proud of our community coming together.
That's great. And the strength of that. And I think what makes your job and what's happening in Nevada special, and I guess there are other states that do that, where you said you have 100 coalitions and you bring all of them together. Not all states are doing that.
Yes. So because we have our rural communities, we have a county that has less than 1,000 people in it.
Wow.
And so we have 10 coalitions serving
seven. Where is that?
It's called Esmeralda County, and it's kind of like smack dab in the middle of the state. It's a very physically big county. But we like to say there are more cows and groundhogs than there are people in a lot of our communities. But we actually come together every quarter to meet to discuss the issues of the day. We have a phenomenal project where we actually co-apply for grants. So
wow.
Especially in our rural and frontier communities, they often don't have the physical
manpower, the expertise.
Yeah, they yeah. can't. We'll apply for grants for the entire state. And one of the coalitions, we call it a lead agency model. So a coalition will apply on behalf of the entire state. Once they get the money, they write all of the other coalitions in as either subgrantees or contractors, and then get the money to our entire community. Right now we're working with Office of Traffic Safety to do a statewide needs assessment. One of the things OTS is seeing in their crash data is a lot of folks are crashing while intoxicated on marijuana, which doesn't surprise you or I, but they don't know why. So working with our coalitions, let's figure out why, and let's figure out why in each community. So we've created both a statewide survey with our external evaluator, and we're doing key informant interviews with each community in Nevada so we can better understand what the issues are and focus on local solutions. So once we have that data, then we can work together to address the local community norms around why people think it's okay to.
So Jamie, you should use our San Diego study data about perception and driving and actual driving impairment and add that Because I bet you what's missing is the education. Like, people know that not to drink and drive. Some people do it still, but it's known that you don't drink alcohol and get behind the wheel. The perception of harms while smoking isn't there. People think you could smoke a joint and drive at the same time. They don't. That perception is gone, and we have the science to show about impairment and solutions, like at least weight.
I think that's amazing. I would love to steal that, because that's what we do in our field, is we find what works somewhere else and we make it our own and use it in our community. So I love that. And I will definitely get with you. And I agree with you. I think education is the thing that is missing right now. We know that education alone, like, because it's always fun when people talk about, oh, well, we just need to tell the kids that drugs are bad. I'm like, yes. And also we need to change the laws to make it harder to get access to the drugs. And we need to make sure that parents and schools and communities are supportive and we have to do this whole thing. Yeah. But when the education is not there, when they don't even know that it is a problem, that has to be the very first issue we solve, along with also ensuring that our laws, our policies, and our communities are wrapping around our kiddos and our community in general to keep us all safe.
Yeah. And I'll throw another one at you. You may want to ask your children's hospital or your emergency departments how many children, babies, like under the age of 5, are coming in with marijuana poisoning, because around the country, the number one cause of pediatric poisoning is marijuana. The number one product is gummy, and then the brownies, and they get it from their parents. And one solution is the packaging. I mean, it just looks like candy, and kids put everything in their mouth. That's what happens. Some states have products that are not to have the flavors or to make it, you know, so it's as a deterrent for babies and children. Or the other one is child proof packaging, which is different than child resistant packaging.
That is heartbreaking. And
it really is.
I'm sure you're right. What is it like in California? What are your numbers of your youth in coming into ERs?
I wouldn't even call them youth. They're like babies. The number one cause of babies. And I do have our local children's hospital has published that data. I don't have it at the top of my head, but it's common. And they studied, you know, like what products they're getting. They studied who they're getting it from, and also what tests kids are getting, because they'll say, oh, this child is unresponsive. You're going to do a CAT scan. You're going to do blood work. You're going to spinal tap. But if parents are honest, it's like, oh, they got into a gummy, then you don't need any of that. And then there's no antidote either. You just have to wait it out. And some kids end up on a ventilator or an ICU. They're not giggling. Their brain is depressed. They have CNS depression.
Oh my gosh. That is so heartbreaking.
And preventable. That's why I'm telling you.
Entirely preventable. Let's get ahead of this. What are we doing preventable to solve this problem upstream? I love that. And so has California been able to...
So we tried that. So I'll tell you all our failures. The first thing we tried as far as consumer protection is labels, warning labels. You have warning labels on alcohol, on cigarettes. We should have just basic warning labels and apply the science that we learned from tobacco to the marijuana industry. Like, there's science on the labels, even like the color and the font size and stuff. So we tried that. Industry and legislator killed it. And so I thought, well, next year, what can we do? Babies. You know, who doesn't like babies? Who doesn't want to protect little babies from ending up on the ICU on a ventilator from eating a gummy and all these other candies? And why do we even need candies? Like, who are these candies for? Adults can use other forms of marijuana. Why do they need candies that look like Weedos instead of Cheetos and things like that? And we have all the data on pediatric poisonings. And we tried that. And, you know, governor, senators of California would not pass that. I thought, okay, let's go the other way around. The cannabis industry is going to kill everything. Let me tackle something else just to be able to do something is on prescriptions. So there are over 300 medications that don't go with THC and over 500 different medications that don't go with CBD. So let's put warning labels, not on the marijuana because they didn't want that. Let's put it on your medication that says don't use with cannabis, just like we have don't use with alcohol or don't use with grapefruit juice. And we even did studies at pharmacies to see if people want this information. And they want it. Like 99% of patients wanted this information. Try to pass something like that. Also, it's like, you know, we don't need to do that. The cannabis industry is too strong. And I think we haven't had enough negative consequences to tilt that towards public health.
Isn't that heartbreaking that the negative consequences are going to be kids with serious health consequences and adults who are taking medication that is being nullified? That's heartbreaking.
Yeah. We had another study that showed in California, we had elderly people over the age of 65, okay? Older people coming to the emergency department with a marijuana-related problem went up 1,804% since legalization. So again, these adults are kind of like the babies. They're not giggling. They're encephalopathic. And it takes longer for them to detox because their metabolism and liver is slowed down. So again, there's no antidote for them. You just have to wait it out. But if we couldn't protect the babies, you know, forget it with the, you know, the elderly Americans.
And our elderly population, they're on a whole lot more medications than our kiddos are.
Yeah. Well, you know what? That is something, and again, that's you're focused on youth prevention. But the other prevention thing is, you know, protecting our senior citizens or, you know, we're finding kids give, you know, grandpa. That's what happened. Give grandpa a brownie like, hey, this will help you sleep. And then grandpa sleeps for a long time, like several days in the hospital because they won't wake up.
Because the kids aren't aware of.
Like, don't give this to grandpa.
Yeah.
He's on other medications that they need, you know, this, and it may interact with Medicaid. People have no concept. I think most doctors even don't even realize how many drug interactions are between cannabis products and, you know, day-to-day medications for your blood pressure, blood thinner, mental health medications.
I remember you teaching me, we were at a conference in probably 2012, 2013, and you had the term scromiting.
Yeah.
And that, like, I'd never heard it before. And I was just this last year, I was chatting with a colleague who's an ER physician here in Vegas. And she was like, oh yeah, we see it every day.
Every day.
It's all the time. It's perfectly common. And like every ER doc now, and they use the term scromiting too.
Yeah. So dude, you're scromiting. It's a lot easier to say than cannabis hyperemesis syndrome.
So it's really fascinating to think that you've been on the forefront of this for so long, and to think that the culture around this has changed to the point where what you were warning everyone about is now commonplace in probably every ER.
Yeah. Everybody sees it every day on a regular basis. And it's tough. It's not easy to be, you know, a futurist, because, you know, you kind of like say this is going to happen and no one's listening. And then years later, it's just a matter of time where things will change and they'll be fixed and there'll be a new problem. But it's not pleasant.
Yeah, that's one of the things we're seeing is Nevada's legislative session. They're looking at doing some studies on psychedelic mushrooms. Because once you legalize one thing, it's a heck of a lot easier to legalize more.
Oh, yeah. You know what? And so one of our prevention coalitions, I'm so proud of them. They were like, what are these mushrooms sold in these shops near schools? And they're like cute cartoon characters. Like, what is that? So one of them came to me like, what are those products? And Dr. Lev, and I'm like, I really don't know. And we partnered, we told the sheriff about it and they did their own study, but we also locally, our prevention folks bought these products, went to a lab, had it tested. And some of these products had nothing in it. Some of them had marijuana, some of them had Delta products, some psychedelics, some bath salts. So you have, there's no concern. You don't, people do not know what they're buying.
Yeah. And if you're marketing to kids after school, that is, I mean, oh gosh, that's heartbreaking to think about. And good for the coalitions for saying, hey, let's at least figure out what's happening directly.
What is this, right? Yes. Yeah. And they, and that was such a good thing that they did because it informed everybody, like the medical community. We don't know unless you told us what that, I have no idea what that is either. Right. And that information passed on to the whole community. As a matter of fact, even the LA Times did a story about that and kind of did their own investigative research. So like informing the public. So that kind of work all from prevention folks. So that's why I'm so proud of you, Jamie. And what you do is so, so important. You as a leader for the other coalitions in Nevada. Any parting words of wisdom for us?
I think that what keeps me invested in this work is connecting to my community and knowing that while I'm never going to see 100% of the effects of the work that we've done in our community, I can look back on the 14 years I've been in this field and think we are so much further along and we have done so much. And so just to keep at it, we're not going to solve this problem in a day, but if we continue to work as upstream as we can to prevent these problems, I think it was Sue Thaw, who is a dear friend of both of ours, said, prevention is the only part of the spectrum that can stand on its own.
Yeah, yeah. We're not going to like arrest our way, but we won't treat our way. We won't naloxone our way, but we could prevent.
We could prevent our way out of this problem. Yes.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So,
I thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. I've been following your career path for at least 10 years now. And so I'm so excited to be able to collaborate with you on this.
Yes, of course. And Jamie, again, I'm so proud of you. Whatever we could do to help you and you could do it. Again, the power of the community is incredible.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to High Truths on Drugs and Addiction, where you learn from experts from around the globe and around all aspects of drugs. This week's episode would not be possible without the generous support of our sponsor. A sincere and warm thank you to Drug Free America Foundation. Visit dfaf.org. And ISAC, the International Academy on the Science and Impact of Cannabis. That's IASIC1.org. High Truths producer is Dave Rivas from Davey Boy Productions. I'm your host, Dr. Onit Lev. We hope we brought your day a little bit more High Truths.